This is going to be the AI episode, one where we basically talk about what we think the future is going to be like and how it's going to affect the practice of designing churches. Let's see. Yeah. Intro music. Welcome to the Beauty of Renew podcast, the podcast where we talk about Catholic art and architecture. Today we're going to talk about these new sort of a new kind of crop, a new generation of image creation tools.
Newfangled things. First, you're Chris Duffel.
Oh, yeah. Introductions. This is Chris Duffel.
And Rafael Morales.
Co-hosts of the Beauty of Renew podcast. The 30-second intro, for those who've never heard the podcast, is we're practicing architects. We design churches for a living. And this is us taking, lunch conversations and just packaging them in podcast form, making it real. So today we're going to talk about this kind of series of new, it's, less than a year old, I think, and since they've come out of into public beta, these software that are basically, right now, at least, the first crop of them are text-to-image generation. Mm-hmm. So you will go onto a website or Discord app or something like that and type in a prompt, and you can just say, beautiful church, hit enter. And then in about 20 seconds, it will create images and not compiling former images. It's not a kind of finding a reference. And I guess in some way it could be. I haven't written software. But the idea, the provocation for this is that it's creating something wholly new, right? Mm-hmm. And the speed of iteration is one that is heretofore unprecedented. So if you type in, and we really should now, I think, do a kind of screen recording of this eventually, but this is just going to be a kind of verbal one right now.
Yeah, to try it live.
Yeah, you just like type in for us. A lot of these things are just, you could say, Neil Armstrong riding a cow on the moon playing chess with Frodo Baggins, and right. It will splice all these things together in ways that are very real. And in some ways, this episode's going to be a kind of check for us. So in a year from now, summer 2023, we can talk about how this thing has progressed. I think this is going to be something that's going to have to be contended with. I don't think it's going to be the end of architectural practice or, what we do, but the pace of design iteration and the kind of speed of production mm-hmm. affects the business of architecture and the way you think about what's good and how you evaluate that.
So you think it's going to be a market disruptor? So
I think it's going to
change how the profession works.
Yeah, I think it's going to change the way at least for us architects, we sell a service, right? You hire an architect to not give you a thing, like you pay Apple for a product, right? There may be other services as well, but for a lot of the things that we sort of interact with in the economy these days, they are products and you pay a fixed amount for a fixed thing. Mm-hmm. In an architecture, it's kind of nebulous because even if you have a kind of turnkey project, it's a Chick-fil-A, the site is slightly different. You have to rearrange parking. There are climactic considerations. So
right.
the kind of technical assembly of the walls and roofs and foundations are going to be slightly different. So there's never a thing that is just taken in one spot and completely plopped down. And there's also other considerations. So what we do though, as a kind of practice, and this is just kind of like speaking to the kind of general public, architecture as a service is, it's important to understand that it's a service industry, which means that it's fundamentally tied to the time we spend on projects, and that because that backs into the way businesses are structured and the way you sort of fund companies and salaries and the kind of the ways you take on projects, it will essentially affect the whole time aspect of how you run a design business.
So I will add a couple more things. So I do think, architecture is very much a service first, but I think that we can't overstate that you're also paying for intellectual property, right? You hire a specific firm because they may have an expertise in our case, church building, or you're building a data center, you're going to go hire a firm that knows a lot about data centers.
So you're
hiring their intellectual property, you're hiring
their experience,
experience, their time to do drawings.
Yeah.
You're also hiring their systems, right? So each architect will develop a series of systems, quality control systems,
right.
Systems that manage the process in general. So you're hiring it is a service packaging, intellectual property, systems, and then time. So that's the kind of, that's what you get in an architect.
Yeah.
And so you're saying that this new program is going to be disruptive to the way that the business is run. And obviously I'd like to get into that, but maybe before we do that, and you touched on it briefly, but could we talk a little bit more about how these image generators work?
Yeah.
So that maybe people get an idea. And we're talking about, I mean, give a couple of examples would be DALL-E.
Yeah. I don't know if you pronounce it DALL-E. D-A-L-L-E.
I mean, I think it comes from the artist, DALL-E.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's why they named it that.
I think DALL-E spelled with an I.
But I think that's okay. That was their inspiration.
DALL-E, like technical. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like WALL-E,
okay.
DALL-E,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And then the other one is
Midjourney.
Midjourney. Yeah. So those are two examples.
Ones. Yeah.
And so I watched a YouTube video on how this works, which makes me an expert, but do you want to take a shot at explaining it and I can fill in the gaps?
Yeah. I mean, if you watch the video, you're probably technically savvy.
I mean, basically, and this is, you know, I'm just regurgitating something I watched on YouTube.
Sure.
But essentially, we have now had decades of people image searching, right? So people searching on Google for images. And so when you search for an image, you type in a prompt and it brings up images that match the prompt. But what I learned is where the connection comes between the search engine and what you type in is that when a journalist takes a picture and uploads it into the internet, it asks them to write a description of what it is, right? And so anytime somebody takes a picture and uploads it to the internet, you type in a description of what the picture is.
Okay.
And so over time, when you have collected millions upon millions upon millions of pictures with descriptions, essentially what DALL-E and these AI algorithms are doing is they're reversing the process. So instead of the human putting in the prompt and then coming up with existing images, you have the opposite. You now have still a human inserting a prompt, but instead of just coming up with existing images, it's using all of that collected data to generate essentially what would you call it? It's generating a brand new image that merges existing images into new, right? So, I mean, it's almost like a soup. It's a soup of images that comes out and generates a brand new image that has never been seen before based on a prompt that is given that is then filtered through all those descriptions that the journalists, et cetera, have been typing in for decades.
Yeah, the way I've heard it explained to me is that it's you're training a neural network to essentially learn the way we learn. Mm-hmm. And what that means is not just that it says cat and this is cat. It learns what types of things define cats and what a kind of catness is. Mm-hmm. So that if you say, you know, cat walking in front of Notre Dame on a rainy day, viewing from above, then it will understand something about how cats walk. And then if it's a kind of wet cat, then it will understand something about the way that the fur will, you know, modify itself and what it's like viewing from above. So it's not just that it needs to find an image of a cat viewing from above, but that it understands in the way that you would ask a person. I say understands, I'm kind of anthropomorphizing this, but it has a series of sort of data points that it can use to then create a novel image in the same way that you or I would, where you don't think like cat and then you have like the cat. You have an idea of what makes a chair or what makes a cat or what makes a trampoline, and you can look at it kind of like those little grids of nine images, and it's like, which one of these is a lion? And you pick one, and it's like, oh great, you're a human.
Yeah.
It's essentially training kind of really high level sort of syntax. And these models of data have so much information in them now, where before it was basically not possible to produce just because of the amount of data you need and the amount of kind of processing power. So in some ways, it's just technically becoming possible to have something like this work. But the novelty in my mind is really that you say a few things, and this is maybe the thing that's most intriguing to me about it, is, and I'd sent you an image of this maybe a month ago, of like, you know, priests walking in front of Notre Dame carrying a breviary in a rainy day. And it chose where in Notre Dame to look. Like it had it not directly centered, but kind of off to the side, like the sort of aisle on the left side of the building. You could see down a little bit. And I didn't tell anything about the sun positioning, so it chose where to position the sun. And it shows how far away to place the priest in front of me and what few cues you needed visually to see it. So it's not just that it gives you what you want, but that it fills in all sorts of other things that are very convincing.
Right.
Like it finishes the world in a way that's not just little figure of a black guy with a white collar, you know, in front of a building that looks just really like it.
Right.
So it's interpolating 95% more than what you're saying to make a kind of winsome, convincing world there. So
the only thing I think I would take issue with that description is I don't think it's, like you say, it's learning like we learn. I don't think that's true. I mean, I think it's
like
it's learning like an algorithm learns. I mean,
when I say like we learn, it's definitely any kind of reason by analogy is going to have.
Yeah, but I don't want. I guess I just don't want it to go too far for people to think that it's they're building a brain that thinks.
Yeah. No.
And it's really a complex algorithm that again is using these descriptions that people have put in. Yeah.
And I wouldn't say that like, we learn like we learn.
You know,
it's like we learn in the sense that we don't look at a cat and say that's a cat. You look at that and you say this has attributes that tend towards catness.
Yeah.
And if you see a thing that's a cat without a leg, you don't say that's not a cat.
Yeah.
You say that's a kind of deviation from what you understand to be the complete version of what a cat is.
Yeah.
So insofar as you're inferring things that are not kind of surface level, that's the way that a human learns. I think it's building, it's software,
right.
But it's kind of building an underlying model that is structured in that way. Now, this is, there are many different versions of this that's not like all of them are the same.
And it's developing over time and we're at the beginning of an arc and who knows where it's going to lead. But
and these two are very different too. The two that we're talking about, the DALL-E Midjourney. Midjourney is specifically developed maybe like with a baseline reference image of like video games and movies. So it's very, it seems like certain types of text strings for these particular software are much more convincing than DALL-E's, and DALL-E seems to have other things that it's strong at. So, So what I wanted to talk about, I think that's a good,
That's a great explanation. So yes, now I want to hear, tell me about how you think it's going to disrupt the design process. So as you think about, say you have a project in front of you to design a new church, How could it change? Like if you had access to this program and let's say it was more advanced than it is now, let's say, it's able to produce very convincing options or ideas for you. How do you see changing how you design in order to use this tool?
Yeah. So if we start a project and the client says, hey, we'd like you to design a new church for us. We have ideas. We wanted to have, a few towers in the front and there's a few, images of buildings from the region of Europe that our patron is from, you have a kind of baseline, right?
Yeah.
The first move of the architect ought to be to, understand the client and the kind of milieu that the building's going in. So you have a kind of basis from which to start, and then there's a time it takes to start developing schemes, and you're going to pull out Trace or get on software and start, looking at reference images, start developing these things.
Right.
So maybe if I say ways in which it could change the way or modify the way it work, I'll start in the very beginning, which is when there's nothing.
Okay.
And there's a new thing that I got an email on yesterday. It's called outcropping.
Okay.
It's probably gonna be one of these like, oh, there's like a new feature called likes, like 20 years ago on Facebook or something. But outcropping is a thing where you take an image and say it's a square image or a rectangle, and you move the border, the crop, off to the side, so it's overlapping a third of the image.
Okay.
It will not, in the same way that it would create new images from a text prompt, it's using the image as the prompt, and it just fills in the border.
Okay.
So if you imagine like the Ghent altarpiece image, and you just said crop to the side, it will then fill in beyond that based on
what it sees,
what it understands,
what is given
to be here. Yeah. So you could, if you wanted to, there's a new possibility now of starting with the design of, say, a door. You have a portal of the church.
Yep.
There's a sort of theological understanding of how this is the kind of beginning of the entrance into the liturgy and like the cosmos. If you had a door and you said, we love this door at, I don't know, St. Patrick's in Ireland or something,
right,
and you outcropped around that, you could then see potentials very quickly for it filling in the rest of the building.
Okay.
Now, it's really... All of these, I think, are fundamentally mostly around speed, and sort of novelty of composition and invention.
Yeah.
What I don't think it has right now, at least from my sort of little dabblings, is the ability to sort of overlay the sign and symbol that's sort of crucial to the formation of architecture for liturgy. And that's what makes it meaningful. Mm-hmm. I think the main difference is going to be the way that it allows architects who have a kind of concrete understanding of how sign and symbol are efficacious in the liturgy and how they participate to iterate more quickly. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to take time, you're going to show your client, you say real practically, we're going to show you three schemes of an entrance facade.
Yeah.
And you may take a few weeks to draw it and you kind of have an idea of how these things work. And then maybe the first week is coming up with basic ideas and the second week is kind of detailing it and then kind of finishing up presentation images.
Yeah.
That process of 2 or 3 weeks, you can spend, I don't know how deep to go into it, but basically it seems like the iteration process can be much more quickly sort of gone through.
Yeah.
Now you still have to take the time to choose and compose, and the images I've seen, there are a lot of glitchy corners. There are places where you're like, that's pretty cool. But if you look closely, you're like, man, that's not resolved.
Yeah.
So at this point, the resolution capabilities seem to be sort of nascent.
Yeah.
But the going through sort of schemes and, you know, maybe what it's allowing is an architect who's done this forever, who's, let's say you've got 10, 20 plus years doing it, their sketching is going to be informed by a kind of knowledge that the relative novice would not have, right?
Yeah.
So it's going to enable maybe greener people to see complete ideas more quickly. And maybe that's the best way to put it, is what it does is it completes an idea. When mm-hmm. you sketch, there's something about the translation from drawing to building where you're drawing a rectangle and you're putting in a window. And then as you work the details, you say, this is, kind of feels pretty right. It's like 70% right, but the windows need to be a little tighter and the bays need to be different. Right. So you have to resketch. Mm-hmm. And there's that process of iteration that it seems like it's just different because there's not a translation from drawing to building where you're thinking as you're holding your hand on the pen and drawing. There's a kind of intuitive process of how that's developing.
Yeah.
This is just like boom, 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 boom. It's like whole image.
Right.
And I actually hadn't really ever thought about it in this way now. It's kind of like you're just given full Xerox copies and you have to say like yes or no.
Right.
And there's not a whole lot of, well, make the bays instead of 20 feet, 24 feet, and then double the height.
Yeah.
It's like whole creation at a time. So yeah, I think that's probably a good summary of how I think it will change. It's that process of in the office, people like the client is not seeing it. It's us going through quickly trying to see what works given the site constraints, technical constraints. You know your church is going to seat, 500 people. You do a kind of plan layout and you say, what would that mean?
So are you, because I'm trying to put some constraints on this because the last description made it sound like it's also making architectural decisions for you. Like in other words, it knows the site constraints and is making designs.
Yeah. No, let me clarify.
So yeah, are you saying that it's Dolly? It's just producing cool images for you to kind of get concepts, or it's like actually designing based on constraints that exist in the real world?
It walks into the church and starts chanting with you whenever the mass starts. Yeah. No, I mean, I right now it's definitely positioned under the human. Right. Yeah. Under the human agency. And it's a kind of concept generation with, that you can have operating alongside your own sort of intuitions and your intellect and your own skills.
It's the random word generator for architecture, for images.
It's a really, really good random word generator.
Okay.
But
that's what it is.
What I don't know right now.
I mean, is that too reductive? Like, is it more than that?
What I think that architects nowadays are encumbered by is the need to keep people safe. No, what I mean by that though is that there's so much time and energy that's wrapped up in maintaining the health, safety, and welfare of the occupants of the building, mm-hmm. making sure the building is technically sound, code compliant, and meets all these things that occupies the majority of your time. When you design a building, it's some fraction, let's say 10 to 25%, depending on the size of the building and scope of the building. Now, there are lots of design decisions that are also health, safety, welfare. Like you're trying to pick a window or pick a wall assembly, and there's something about the design. But what you would, what a non-industry person would say is a design decision, most of the time that's a definitely less than half, definitely less than three quarters of your time. And what I think it does is it enables that little amount of time that you have in the overall fee of the project where you're trying to, part of it's like keeping the water out. Part of it's making sure the stairs work, rise and runs.
Yeah.
Part of it's making sure that the building's going to be cooled. The amount of time you have relative to the way markets are structured to design is small. Yeah. And that's going to make that time more fruitful because I think it will allow you to, I mean, maybe this is too reductive, but one way to look at it is it could just be like you have a really great library that you don't have to pull a book off the shelf to look at. And you can type in and the library is in some way infinite inside of the TARDIS. It's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside because you can create the prompt from which it will give you image generation. I don't think that it's at the point now, and it doesn't seem to me like we're like in the kind of near term where you can give it it will create a complete design deliverable.
Yeah.
Where you can give it, because there's so many constraints that you can't type in enough of that it's going to give you enough of a kind of platform to operate on top of that it will help the good architect, at least working in sacred architecture, potentially. I mean, I almost cage my words because it's like it's going to help you be better. But it makes me think, what's defective? Like, what are you not being able to do?
That actually was going to be my next question, is what problem is this solving? You know, because if it's a great concept generator, so, you know, it's just going to help you maybe come up with ideas that you wouldn't have thought of just because whatever, we have a limited amount of time. We're earthly beings. And so if there was this thing that could produce 300 versions of the church you're designing,
right,
then maybe you would find an idea that you would otherwise not have come across. Mm-hmm. So that seems to be kind of the upside for it. Mm-hmm. But what problem is it solving exactly?
It is a solution in search of a problem right now. I think the way that these things are made, they, or at least from what I understand, they weren't made to solve a problem.
Yeah.
They are an application of, you know, natural language models and, you know, this thing, this sort of AI industry, it's there.
Yeah.
And I think what it is it's a recognition that it can do this particular thing. It can now take text and then on its own generate convincing images.
Right.
And these things, like a year ago, they were not convincing.
Yeah. No, it's amazing how far
they've come. But the pace of growth, and the reason why we're recording this and I want to talk about it, is the pace of growth seems to be pretty startling.
Yeah.
And it could be like anything. Like you look at SpaceX and you're like, wow, it's crazy. And if you map out the chart, we're like on the moon yesterday.
Yeah.
And now it's like, well, we found a kind of hidden ceiling. Like we spiked and then we hit a plateau and we spiked. So it could be one of those things where we have just seen a spike over the last 12 months.
Yeah.
And then it won't get much better. But if it does get better, then it could be pretty game changing. And I should say the thing that I think is most sort of alarming right now is it seems like the sort of fantasy children's book illustrations, it has perfect.
Yeah.
Like if you say there's a cat reading a book by a pond next to a frog who's holding a red apple.
Yeah.
And then you see an image like that's not quite great. And you say watercolor afterwards and it makes a watercolor. Yeah. Not watercolor. Pointless. Kind of like Disney. And it will. And it just makes these images. That sort of thing, it seems to be very good at. Other things like faces in particular and text, it's not great at.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a problem that's solving? Maybe. And that's kind of what this conversation is kind of sussing out.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a thing that was made to solve a problem. One of the difficulties, I think, is that a lot of architects doing church work don't have a kind of imagination that I find convincing. I mean, this can go back to our my beef with classicism episode in the future, but
we should definitely do that one.
Yeah, but I think in some ways the thing that I find unsatisfying about sacred architecture today, for most of these buildings, is that it's a kind of recapitulation of historicism in a way that looks like it's been value engineered and cost cut, and it's fine. Like it's not a kind of modernist box or a kind of a concrete nothing. But it doesn't stir the heart you know? And it's the hope I see in it, if I have a hope in a kind of technological, you know, integration of the practice, is that it will allow architects who are up to this point wanting to design churches and have maybe done one or two churches and are like maybe praying themselves to move outside of the box of comfort and to see things that, if you already have a kind of baseline of scripture in your prayer life, you like pray the Psalms, you read the Gospels, you go to Mass, you do, you live the life of faith.
Yeah.
And you see these things, you could say, that's a cool thing. And I see how this could then be overlaid onto what I already understand about what we're trying to sort of symbolize in the cosmos through this architecture.
Yeah.
So it's more kind of provocation for people that are looking for things out there. Mm-hmm. Like the way I think about it, there's many things are, it's like a very positive look. Mm-hmm. Like it's very easy, I think, to look at this and be like, you know what? This is technology designing churches and it's fundamentally bad. And John Sr. would like murder you for it. But there's something about this that I think speaks to the condition of the practice, or maybe culture more broadly, with respect to sacred architecture. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's maybe like the positive, positive spin I can give on it.
Right. So I think if I can summarize, your thought is, if it can help people to think outside the box, if it can help people to expand the limits of what they can design, because it's going to present them with a lot of new images, maybe some things that they've never thought of combining, right? Like you can combine the architecture of a mosque with the architecture of a Catholic church because you're designing in Iraq or something. And all of a sudden now you're creating something new, or you're combining a really ornate Gothic church with a Romanesque church in a very new and distinct way. And so you're like, wow, this has never existed before.
Yeah.
So it could present architects with a new palette without having to spend years developing it. You know, you could have it right in front of you in a matter of minutes, you know, and you could see how you could come. I mean, I'm just trying to be like very nuts and bolts here.
Yeah, sure.
You could combine, let's say, existing styles that have never been combined before and see what that looks like in less than 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so, so it could open up new avenues for you, because you could investigate whether it's worth combining Gothic architecture and Romanesque, you know, maybe it's not worth it because you look at it and it's like, actually that doesn't look very good. So this would allow you to very quickly investigate maybe things that don't normally go together and see if there's something there. I mean, again, this is just a very concrete example.
Sure. But, no, that's exactly. Yeah. And I mean, buildings have a kind of story. Churches have a kind of story they're trying to tell. And it's not clear to me right now that the systems for these image generation software are going to be able to also tell that story. It's possible they may, but for your particular community, because the story has so many kind of nuances. Like, first of all, it's Catholic and it's faithful to the teachings of the church. And it's got a time and a place.
Yeah.
And so all of these things, I'm sure it can make something somewhere that kind of is convincing. But these images you're seeing online, they have no context. They have no site. They have no location.
Right.
They're just, wow, that's a really cool, you know, sci-fi looking space thing. Or the random images I put together came together and it actually, like, it's well lit. Like, that's, so right now it's convincing insofar as it's novel. It could be that when we do this episode 2, 3, 4 years in the future, it's just a kind of, it's just a thing. Like, it's just not there.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm much more skeptical of its application, and not because I don't think the technology is incredibly impressive, because I think it is, but because of what you just said. I mean, I think that the technology will never be able to capture the story of the gospel because it's not Catholic. Yeah. You know, I mean, I guess you could make a Catholic AI that really understands it, but that it, there's still going to be something that the human brings that it will never be able to bring. However, so having said all that, as you were talking, I thought of maybe some applications. So for example, you said children's books, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people out there who maybe are great writers, but could never afford a great illustrator.
Yeah.
Like ever,
yeah,
you know, absolutely. And they're never going to be able to get a deal with a giant publishing house. So this technology would allow them to have potentially really great illustrations for a book that they can now publish. right?
Yeah.
So it almost helps the people without the resources for illustration mm-hmm. to all of a sudden produce illustrations.
Yeah, it's similar to the conversation about photography at the beginning of digital photography.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's going to enable a whole new sort of spectrum of people that can't afford film to,
right.
to be yeah. photographers, which means there's a whole lot of really terrible photography.
There's a lot of terrible photography.
But, yeah. you know, it also... You know, YouTube, same way, like it lowers the barrier to entry to getting videos online.
But there's way more of it.
So there's a lot of trash and there's, you know.
There's a lot more variety.
Some good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's part of it. Now, if we think about it in industry terms, in our industry, I can see, I remember in college, and we don't really do this as much anymore, but like there was this exercise. I'm sure you did something similar where like, okay, you have a concept for your design and now you need to somehow express it. Mm-hmm. But you're not ready to design yet. It's too early. So make a collage of images that communicate your design. I don't know if you ever did that.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
but
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
like you yeah. would take existing images
yeah.
that kind of
a concept, mood board. Yeah.
Yeah. Mood well, board. but you would actually put them together into a collage that looked like an image.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
like, you know, you would do that. So you would take like, okay, I want to do a plaza with a bridge over it, with a market, and then residential housing on top, and you mix it all in, and it creates this image that communicates the concept, but it's using existing buildings, right? Like you could see London in the background or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I can see this being that, but a much better version of it, right? Yeah. Because it would be novel. It would be creating new concepts. Mm-hmm. So you could say, okay, we have a client who wants to do a Cistercian style church. He, you know, it's on this site that kind of, it's very reminiscent of France. Mm-hmm. And we just want to show them three or four different feels, different like concepts, but, yeah. but they're very raw. Like they're just meant to elicit right. emotion.
Yeah.
I could see this being very effective
totally.
For that.
Yeah.
But once you turn the corner and you're like, okay, now we need to actually start thinking about how this would be real. Mm-hmm. That's where the application of this, I think, begins to fade a little bit,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, I agree.
But for those initial concepts, those sparks that you just kind of want to capture a feeling, I could see that being very effective, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
So I was also thinking about something you said, which was we don't have enough time designing. You know, we spend so much time worrying about, you know, life safety, mm-hmm. Making sure that you specify the right tile so people don't slip. You know, like there's like all these perfunctory things, that, you know, yeah, thinking yeah. about the hardware on the door to make sure that people can get in and out. And
yeah.
I mean, we spend a lot of time on that. So for me, like if I was writing our AI overlords, mm-hmm. I would say, hey guys, how about you find a way to get rid of all the back end of architecture so that we
automate
just
it.
Design the entire, you know, like
yeah,
if
yeah.
if you could automate code, if you could automate structural design and yeah. all the things that just have to happen
yeah.
that have so, I mean, that have a lot to do with design, but in a yeah. sense, they also have very little to do with design.
Yeah.
They're just kind of a consequence of design.
Right.
That's what I want the DALL-E for.
Yeah.
You know?
and I think there's a very real, I mean, that may sound, I can hear the skeptics who are in the industry being like, you can't do that. Yeah. I think there's a very real place that we're not at yet where humans still make decisions mm-hmm. and humans still sign off on it.
Yeah.
But a lot of the perfunctory stuff, like, you know, to go on a website, pick a tile, look on, find the thing you want, download the PDF and look at the coefficient of friction and
yeah.
that sort of stuff. It's basically just us doing what is very procedurally descriptive mm-hmm. It's formulaic.
Yeah.
And what needs to be done.
Yeah.
So there are things like that, and even code compliance, there still needs to be people that look at the analysis from software, yeah. but the sort of technical, perfunctory is a good word, tasks that need to be done, that can largely be automated to then be checked by a person mm-hmm. so that it still exists in the real world. Like you're never right. going to just say, well, no one's ever going to look at it and it's going to be fine because mm-hmm. that's how people die.
Right.
But I think what you just sort of dreamed about is very doable. It's very real.
Yeah. I mean, some of it's already happening.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
beginnings of it anyways.
Yeah.
So I just had another thought about going back to DALL-E and image generation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sometimes we'll have clients come to us and say, hey, all we have is a master plan
yeah.
or we completed a master plan. We're not ready to do a design yet, mm-hmm. but we need fundraising images that
yeah.
just kind of show something about what we're going to do.
Yeah.
I mean, I know St. Anthony asked us to do something like this, where mm-hmm. they were just like, we're not ready to design the whole thing, but we just need some images to fundraise.
Yeah.
That's where yeah. DALL-E could really yeah. pay dividends
totally.
Because you actually are not trying to design anything. Like
yeah.
you're just trying to get a feeling across.
You're trying to sell hope. Yeah.
Yeah. You're trying to sell just an idea, a vision, right? Mm-hmm. And you knowing that the vision is going to develop and change.
Yeah.
So I actually think that yes, DALL-E could work in that sphere. So let's say end of master plan, you know, before schematic design, let's say a client just isn't ready to keep going. Mm-hmm. That's where it could pay serious dividends. Yeah. I just thought of that.
And it may be that we get to a future where 5 years from now, people just look at images and there's just a little sort of qualifier at the bottom. Like DALL-E has a little logo that's mm-hmm. got five colored squares on it.
Yeah.
It looks like a kind of photograph with a little kind of color matching thing or color calibration. It could be that when you look at an image and it has that in the future, you get that it was made from a text. So you look at that and you say, okay, so like, what was the text? And you like the image is kind of secondary to what the text prompt is.
Yeah.
So if we say, you know, like suburban Catholic church inspired by, you know, Cistercian architecture, whatever, and they see one and they see the little qualifier, that's like an asterisk. We're like, okay, but that's not a real thing. So I know that they're kind of working on it.
Yes.
Like there could be a kind of heuristic that just happens.
You know that this isn't a fully developed design. It wasn't developed by humans or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. That's a good point. So the other thing, okay. So now we kind of talked about the upside mm-hmm. of DALL-E and all this technology.
Yeah.
Let's now bring it down and talk about the downside.
Yeah.
The downside.
Before we talk about the downside, I think that, there's a thing that you and I know just because we hang out so much and talk about things all the time, but, I don't disagree with any of your assessments.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, it's the, when you said like, I don't think that it could ever, fully capture the gospel in a kind of created form. I don't disagree with that at all.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I know you don't. No. And I was not implying that.
I was trying to be as positive, give as positive a spin as possible.
Yeah, no. Yeah. And I know. We both recognize that there are limits to these things. And ultimately as humans, we bring something. Otherwise we wouldn't be here.
Yes,
that's a good distinction. Well, actually that's a great segue into the downside of DALL-E, you know, or the limits. And so one of the things that I had brought up to you before in one of our previous conversations was, okay, so if you are, let's say you are using DALL-E, I'm just keep using them as an example.
Yeah, DALL-E is a kind of like go by for shorthand. All of these things.
Yeah. For conceptual design images after a master plan, because you're not ready to jump into a full design. And so you use this to generate a whole bunch of images, right? That you could have analysis paralysis, right? So you're presented with over 100 choices of what this church could be.
Yeah.
And you're just like, what do I do? You know, I think it's pretty well proven through kind of market research that if you give people too many choices, they will get paralyzed, you know? So I mean, that's one potential downside.
Yeah. Now, do you think that's a downside of the software itself or that downside of the way it could be used?
I think that's a downside of the reality of humans. You know what I mean? So it's not the software itself, but the question remains that, okay, so you have this technology that can generate, in theory, hundreds of images, right?
Functionally infinite, as long as you're willing to pay for it.
How do you choose which one is right? You still need a human to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But what I'm saying is that even humans would struggle with that, you know, because, I mean, you and I can think about this, and let's put it in terms of our wives, which we are blessed to have them. But, you know, the reality is that we could have married a number of people. Like, in other words, there are alternate scenarios in which our lives are very different, right? Yeah. And all of them good. And so what I'm saying is you could be presented with 50 options that all are great.
Yeah.
So then what do you do, right? Yeah. So what I'm saying is like, there could be an overload where you're just like, that the natural friction of having to draw it yourself, the natural friction of having to, you come up with the precedent images for you to have to go through the process of design is actually a helpful filter for what something should be. Mm. So if you remove the filter, the friction of the human having to do it, you actually end up with, potentially great scenarios, but how do you know which one's right?
Yeah.
That's kind of...
I hear what you're saying. It sounds like, though, you're critiquing the person using it and not the software. Where, like, I could... the way I would maybe counterpose is that it sounds like it's just a different kind of design process. Mm-hmm. Where you're essentially... in some ways, it's less sort of embodied because you're not using your fingers and you're not drawing the lines and there's something about the feel of the pen on the page. And there's a really interesting essay by Robin Evans called Translation from Drawing to Building, where he talks about the sort of process of, as the essay talks about drawing a building,
yeah,
and then how that drawing becomes a building in the future. But yeah, it seems like it's a different kind of decision. What you're deciding on is you're deciding on the quality of images on the whole, and not every sort of half second, sort of intuitively, sort of understanding what it is you're drawing.
But I guess
what
I'm getting at is, I mean, think about like when you go, you know, we had snow cones come to our neighborhood the other day, mm-hmm. and they had like 10 flavors or whatever, and it's like, how do I choose which one I want? Well, I guess I'll just get one of each, you know, like, because it's hard to choose. Like they could all be good. Right. So I guess what I'm saying is, yes, it's not inherently a problem with the software, but if the software doesn't recognize the fact that humans have trouble deciding between a lot of options, like maybe the algorithm needs to present you just with four, which I think is what it's doing. And I think it's probably doing that on purpose, by the way, that it already is filtering out and only presented you with four options because it knows you're going to have trouble if it presents you with 50.
I don't think that's the case. I think that's a computational decision. That's them saying we can only afford so much compute because we have to pay for it.
Yeah, but I think there's some wisdom to that. I mean, that's what I'm saying. If you were presented with 50 images in front of you, like, what would you, how would you go about deciding?
Yeah,
right?
So let's assume that the compute is free functionally.
Right.
And they, if you hit play,
your
browser, your screen is the only limit. And you can look at a tile, you see 45 images at first.
Yeah.
And you can scroll down, and as fast as you can scroll,
it creates. Going and going.
Say that's the case. I think I'm going to try to elide this into my original sort of optimism.
Yeah.
What this does is it gives you not realities, but say like snapshots of finished products.
Right.
And I think it's, you know, I think it's just a different kind of thing.
Yeah, but I guess try to answer, how do you decide between them? That's what I'm trying to understand.
How do you decide between three sketches you draw?
I think through which one fits best the needs of the client, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But there's only three of them, so that's not that hard.
Yeah.
Now, if I had 700 sketches, I'm not sure how I would choose.
No, man, it's an interesting provocation. Part of the constraint is just time. So let's say there are no constraints on compute. You have functionally infinite number of images, and you have a week to come up with a concept.
Right.
They're like, or let's say 1 month to come up with three fully fleshed out concepts.
Yeah.
And that's not just the front. That's like plans, elevations. They say we have three styles. We have three building committee members who all have very strong ideas.
Right.
Let's say this scenario exists. How do you pick? Part of the constraint is just they can't let you design forever. Right. So you could say, I can only scroll for 9 hours a day. So there's a constraint there.
Right.
And then you have to just pick one. And part of it is arbitrary, honestly.
And that was going to be my thing. How do you prevent this from becoming a completely arbitrary process where you're just literally picking something because like you're out of time or because like, I don't know, sure, this one. But it's like, that feels wrong, that it would be so arbitrary that you're just like, literally, I mean, you just put them up on a wall and you throw a dart and you're like, okay, that's the one we're going with.
I'm going to suspend what is my belief at this point and just lean into like the devil's advocate all the way and just try to defend it all the way in.
Yes.
Because I empathize with some of what you're saying, but.
Well, but no, but the reason why I think this is the meat of the conversation is because I think you are much more comfortable.
Yeah.
Considering lots and lots of ideas than I am. And so that's why I want to have this conversation.
Yeah. So I'm going to like, I'm going to even unhinge my optimism at this point. I'm just going in. So, how you could say that my biggest hesitation in any of this is that if you're not engaged corporeally in the creation of something, like physically making it, there's something that feels like you're removing yourself from reality.
Right.
And if all you're doing is sitting back in your chair with like a kind of intravenous straw of Coke and like, you know, remote control in hand and sort of like clicking yes, no, swipe left, swipe right. That seems like it's just intuitively wrong.
Right.
Now, moving that aside for a moment, the interesting provocation is that when that is removed, you can go through, you can maybe exceed your ability to produce iterations in the amount of time allotted. I keep on going back to a perfunctory time thing, but
sure.
Say you can really
that's
only
the upside.
Yeah. Say you can really only develop three ideas.
Yeah.
And that's because of the time.
Right.
Maybe the ideas just come wholesale. And what you do is you look at.
So the upsides 10,000. You have. Yep. Yeah. Let's say 100 just to keep it manageable.
Sure.
Let's say upside is.
Yeah.
Human can develop three ideas.
Yeah.
Computer develops 100. Yep. Okay. So you now have 100 ideas in front of you.
Yeah. Yeah. And the decision making has to happen at some point where you just say, all right, we have, and this is just the architect, you know, I'll say arbitrary just because things can flex a little bit, but they're informed by reality, but they make a decision,
yeah.
Right? It's part of the architect's job to do that. You say, there's a seating requirement. That's one of the first things you do. And a church right. comes to you and say, we're going to have a day chapel. It's going to seat yeah. about 325 people.
Right.
And then you lay out what would be a liturgically appropriate space, and it's in a circle, and the altar's in the middle, and then
yeah,
that was a joke.
Well, I thought the AI did this,
yeah.
which I would be like, yeah, that's probably what they would do.
So yeah, they're trying to corrupt everyone. No, so at that point, you draw a simple basilica plan, and you say, right. this can seat this many people, here's yeah. a center aisle,
right.
pews, whatever.
Okay.
And that's one of the flags you plant in the ground.
Yes.
And then you have an idea of what you think the facade could look like, and you have an idea of massing. So,
this is still a human doing this.
Human doing this, yeah. Okay. This is like when the client tells me, It's going to be a 350 seat day chapel. I go straight to the things that are easy wins. Right. Like you can design a beautiful basilica style church.
Okay.
We've talked about this before. So that I would just say that's a good starting point.
Yep.
And you immediately have a plan proportion. You have a kind of height. There's a lot of things that the building becomes because there's a precedent for right. how to do this well.
Yeah.
And that will allow a lot of the decisions or a lot of the iterations that the AI will make to just kind of fall off the table.
Right.
And then some of them may come back, but you say, okay, here's a certain set of constraints.
Right.
And then you pick a few materials, the constraints fall off or the options fall off. So what I'm trying to say is that,
but okay. So you're saying that the constraints you put on it would begin to filter out some of these things.
Correct.
But what if the constraints you put in your constraints, seating capacity, this style, whatever, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. there's still 100 options it generates because yeah. it could yeah. conceivably still generate yeah. 100 options.
Yeah. Yes.
Then what?
Functional infinite still.
Right.
You have to pick. You have to start drawing.
But how do you pick? I mean, that's kind of what I'm...
Yeah.
That's what I'm struggling with because
how do you
at
pick?
Some point, does it become completely arbitrary?
So there's a version of this where we're in like 1983 and you have a public library, any public... You have Seattle Public Library, Houston Public Library, New York Public Library... And you have a client that says, you know, I've spent a long time earning a lot of money mm-hmm. and I want to figure out how to be the most magnanimous I can. Mm-hmm. And my priest said that I should fund a building
yeah.
and I want to give you at the, you know, you finished school, you're working. I want to pay for you to design the best building ever.
Mm-hmm.
And you spend the rest of your career traveling to libraries because that's how you find drawings. And you read books and you study and you build models and maybe you take on other commissions to practice. And in the end of your life, you design this building.
Yep.
And this building is your opus.
Right.
And you have all the funding you need, all the time you need, the emotional support from your family you need. You have the perfect site.
Yeah.
The client says, I trust you implicitly. Do everything you want.
Right.
What I'm describing here is that the normal restrictions on building are functionally gone. Right. But you still have to decide because you only have one life to live and you have to design the building.
Yeah, you're still building something yeah. in the real world.
At a certain point, you pick a site. And at a certain point, you find something in a book where you say, this is worth building.
Yeah.
And meaning there is a precedent, let's say. Not, you're yeah. not copying anything, but you have a thing that's a really good kind of impetus.
Yeah.
You choose to do that. And like, how did you make that choice?
Yeah.
I see your question about how to pick from 100 or 10,000 images that have constraints.
Yeah.
In the same sort of family, maybe it's not the exact same question, but I see them to be of a kind with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And you still have to pick. Like you can keep on traveling to libraries. You can travel yeah, to OSC but and pick see, and keep on studying.
So the difference is, and this is what I would call, how would you solve the Netflix scroll problem, mm-hmm. right? I mean, mm-hmm. this has been yeah. documented that people spend hours scrolling through Netflix because yeah. they can't decide what to watch.
Yeah. yeah.
So they just spent an evening yeah. scrolling through Netflix,
yeah.
right? So how would you solve for the architectural equivalent of scrolling through Netflix for hours? So yeah, what I'm
yeah,
saying is
yeah, yeah.
you posited this as it's going to save us so much time because I can generate so many images.
Yeah.
But my pushback to that is, or you could be sitting there scrolling for hours trying to decide which one is yeah. is right.
Yeah.
When in reality, like you didn't save any time.
Well,
you just spent your time doing something different.
Yeah. You know? I should say, if I said save time, maybe I should qualify that and say, the time it takes to generate concepts will be shortened to the point where it will be functionally zero.
Yeah.
It's the amount of time it takes you to think about an idea and to type it up and hit enter.
Yeah.
Let's just say that technological progress continues as it is. this is like really leaning into the kind of utopian positivist yeah. future of all these things.
Yeah.
It's still, you still have to make a design decision. I think this is a really fascinating question. It's really important.
No, because it's really interesting.
You have to start, you have to at some point decide this is worth emulating. This is a potential model, a potential image, a potential sort of height and feel
yeah.
that, you know, so, this is like, this is what architects, I think this is the most important thing they do
right.
is that they take all of their sort of intuitions and their like life of like intellect and prayer and reading mm-hmm. and they make decisions.
Right.
You sort of impress part of who you are onto the world.
Yeah.
And hopefully part of who you are is good, but.
Right. And so I think this is where we run into the corporeal problem that you, yeah. you know, you were saying that so much of what we bring to architecture is ourselves, our bodies, et cetera.
Yeah.
I think what you lose in having access to infinite options is the reality that as a human, you have a limited amount of time. Mm-hmm. There's only so many trips to the library you can make.
Yeah.
Right? So that is a natural, what's it called? A natural limit,
yeah.
that is imposed on you, mm-hmm. right? We also mm-hmm. have only one life to lead. Mm-hmm. Limits are helpful for creativity. I mean,
yeah.
in fact,
yeah, I agree.
Architecture thrives on limits, right?
Yep.
So by introducing something that is essentially limitless, I think you lose meaning in architecture. Like what makes architecture meaningful is the expression of limits in yeah. some sense.
Mm. Yeah.
By
yeah.
removing that limit, it becomes orders of magnitude more meaningless, mm. right? Yeah. And I think that's a big problem with modern life as well.
Yeah.
You know, like, and let's go back to the TV analogy and the Netflix, people scrolling. So there used to be a shared kind of cultural milieu that we would all inhabit, right? Because everyone was watching the same thing.
Oh, yeah. yeah.
We would all be watching the same shows. Before,
you're talking about pre-on-demand TV?
Pre-on-demand TV. Yeah, and we yeah. would get together at work and we would talk about the shows, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Sports are still somewhat there, but even that, you know, is beginning to erode. So you introduce now the on-demand TV. You could ostensibly be watching shows that I will never watch,
yeah.
et cetera, right? Is there anything wrong with that? Not necessarily, but you have lost a common cultural bond. So I think there's something analogous in the architecture world where by removing the limits of me having to physically think through this stuff and having to go to the library and find precedents and just go through the process bodily of creating ideas, meaning escapes in the process.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I agree with that when it takes on a life of its own.
Yeah.
The way that I find, I think most potential hope for this is that if it's like a, if it's used like sketching is used, mm-hmm. you never sketch an entire building. You rarely even sketch an entire,
yeah.
you know, they're always vignettes. They're always a kind of frame that's cropping out more than it's showing.
Right.
And I think a lot of architecture can be summarized as going through tens of thousands of vignettes of mostly cropped. So you're trying to figure out how a stone turns a corner. Does it miter? Is it chamfered? Is it yeah. protruding out? How's it?
Yeah, but here's what, you know, going back to kind of what I'm thinking is, but what the limit to how many ideas you can explore is the fact that you're a human and you can only mm-hmm. sketch so many ideas, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So here's I guess what I'm getting at. And I was actually talking to Luis, you know, we published that other episode with
right,
him
right, right.
In the thing. And what I told him, because he, you know, he's struggling with which idea to do, right? With yeah. narrowing the idea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so he's like, well, you know, I don't know what to do. And he said to me, but it's okay because I'll just keep going. This will be an ongoing thing, my thesis. You know, so I don't have to decide the one idea that's going to work because I'll just keep doing this after I get out of school. And I looked at him and I said, Luis.
Bad idea.
No.
Yeah.
I said, you get one shot to get this right. I said,
yeah.
this is your thesis. And I'm going to tell you right now, you will never revisit it again, yeah. period. So choose a right idea.
Yeah.
And that's a helpful limit. Yeah, you know, no, it's helpful to be like, no, like this is it.
Yeah.
You're not going to get another 10 buildings.
Yeah.
Get this one right. And yeah. so like, I'm going back to limits, you know, those limits is what help focus the mind, you mm-hmm. know? And so then if you are presented with, let's say, I mean, again, you could theoretically be presented with 100 scenarios that any one of them would be great, mm-hmm. you know? And yeah. so what do you do?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's what I struggle with.
Yeah. How is deciding on that different from, I'm trying to figure out where it is that we aren't on the same page. I think we agree fundamentally that you can't do it without people, mm-hmm. right? And the degree to which you remove the kind of bodily experiences, in some way, the degree to which it becomes less sort of complete or less perfect, yeah. right? So that there's a kind of idea there.
So
that
I guess can be maybe the difference we're having, and you tell me if I'm wrong, but I think that you would have analysis paralysis when presented with this many options. And maybe you're saying that you would not have analysis paralysis. Okay. Yeah, I think I would. Just because you could objectively say all these things are good.
Yeah.
So what? And you know, like, what do I do?
I mean, you could say these are good, but there's this feeling, this sort of dopamine rush you get where you're like, but if I scroll a little bit more, I could see. Right. And maybe the best one is one scroll away. Yeah. And that, you know, that's a very sort of today. That's a concern that's very current.
Yeah.
If you have five good options, I go back to sketching. What if you sketched five options you like and you have 500 like images that are created that all seem like they're interesting? I say images. I really do think that this is best done at the currently, maybe long term, at the scale of a kind of crop sketch. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how does this capital meet this thing?
So that I think is the best. Here's the difference between, as I see it, between five options you sketched and 500 is you could think through the five options and make a decision.
Yeah.
You cannot think through 500 options and make a decision. So what I'm saying is the level of thoughtfulness, let's say that the curve of thoughtfulness decreases the more options you have just because you physically would not have time to really be thoughtful about it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
At some level, your decision to go with one thing over another would be pure gut. It'd be like, well, I think that's the best because I don't know.
Yeah.
Because I just have a feeling. Yeah. What I'm saying is when you only have five options to consider, you do have time to be thoughtful and say, I think this one's the best because X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
When you have 500, there's no way that you would have time
to
thoughtfully consider 500 options.
Yeah.
So maybe my biggest beef, so to speak, with this concept is the arbitrary nature of it. Like that it could become really arbitrary.
Yeah. No, it definitely is primed to succumb to the difficulties of the ease of digital production.
Right.
Where the quality of photos after the invention of digital photography, you know, your average quality of photo just like plummets.
Yeah.
Same thing for YouTube videos and music production and book production. And so it will dilute the average thing that's made.
Right.
It may not actually get to the point like that for buildings because buildings cost so much relative to other things and take so much sort of political and financial and sort of emotional inertia to get it going that it may be in some way separate from other types of purchases like that. But
yeah,
I don't know. I just don't have a problem sort of saying, it's not a whole idea. So let's just say it's not a whole idea. If you're trying to sketch, the way, like a window is set in, I don't have a problem with like printing out 200 images of like automatically created window surrounds at the Metacastone and sort of looking and just sort of like intuition is a good thing. And I look at it and say like, these are interesting.
Yeah.
There's like 9 out of 200. And then actually though, this 11th one's pretty good too.
So
and then just like kind of whittling.
When you put it like that.
And then sketching on top of it.
Yeah. When you put it like that, I can see it. So because the way we were positing it originally was a whole building. Well, a whole building is so complex. I mean, there's so many things that go into a building that to try to make a decision on a building based on like a series of iterations would be difficult.
Yeah.
But let's say it was a pattern. You were trying to figure out the pattern behind the altar and you had this thing to produce 500 versions. That I could see being helpful because that decision is very simple. Yeah. That decision is like, which one jumps out at me visually? But to try to decide on a building, that would be too complex of a thing to decide on. But if you could narrow it down and say like, what should the detail on the front of the altar look like? Click 500 options. Okay, now I can see that work.
And that's what I meant by
I can see that
the idea that there you're always showing, you're zooming in and showing a lot less than all of it.
That I can see working.
When it is a kind of sketch, like sort of in scare quotes.
But it would need to be then focused. I mean,
And so it's that sort of, architecture
Actually, I think they would work at the two ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, I was going to say architecture. Yeah. I was going to go straight to sort of the arc Engel sort of diagram as building.
Right.
Rim cool house.
It works on the two ends, but not in the middle.
Yeah. Well, and in the middle is where you resolve it. One end is what are the major moves? Like if you just described a building in three moves, it's the donut building.
And you weren't even trying to fully flesh it out. It's just what can we come up with that would be cool? You know, and it's just a flash.
Yeah.
Right. That's it.
Yeah.
So that I can see totally working. Yeah. And then on the other end, if you're trying to finalize the paneling pattern in the back of the church, I can see that.
Yeah.
But in the middle, that's where I don't quite see it.
Well, the middle is architecture. And what you're saying is I can't do, because one is like, what's the sort of concept sketch?
Yes, I can see that.
You're like freshman level studio, it's a donut, or it's like an L shape or something. So it can iterate at that scale and it can iterate at those scale. In some ways they're the same thing.
Yes.
Because they're not everything.
They're not everything. That's the key word right there.
And everything in the middle is architecture. And no, I agree with you. I see now more clearly what your sort of critique is.
Right.
And I think that's right. But the potential there is that the iterations of the building as diagram on one end and the iterations of the floor pattern or the wall pattern, whatever, that is something that those take time. And this is me backing into the sort of financial structure of a company, is you have to pay someone to sit at a computer and to sort of iterate. Mm-hmm. And there's in my mind, not a whole lot of difference between saying, okay, I want you to do a grid, like a 10 by 10. I mean, this is what I would do in school. Is I would say, I'm gonna design a staircase.
Yeah.
And what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna pick a stair and I'm gonna copy it over and I'm gonna choose 10 different ways that the stair is gonna glide.
Yeah.
I'm gonna angle it. And sometimes it was even this methodical. I'm gonna angle it 10 degrees and 20 and 30 and 40.
Yeah.
And then I'm gonna give it a crook and I'm gonna give it a turn back or switch back. And then I'm gonna copy these rows down across the top. There's a big row. I'm gonna copy it down 10 times.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I have 100 options.
Right.
And every row, I'm going to apply a rule where I'm going to say round the corners, and I round all the corners. And the next one I'm going to apply, and I was doing in a kind of dumb way what this thing would do.
Yeah.
And then I would back up.
Well, I wouldn't say it was dumb. It was probably more smart than what it's doing.
It was in a not kind of automated manner.
Right.
And it would do that and then back up. And so you spend like an hour just kind of
going through these options.
And you back up and you look at it. And a lot of these things, it's almost like you're turning off the decision to choose a single thing.
Mm-hmm. You just want to see however many possibilities you can come up with.
And then eventually on like 76, you're like, that's weird. But when I couple this and this, that's what it is.
Right.
And this is like the new way that the stair sort of aligns itself. So it's in some ways kind of like rule-based sketching.
Mm-hmm.
But I totally agree with the idea that if you have the left and the right end, the diagram, and then the sort of detail, the middle is where things happen. The middle is also where the story is told.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that is why I think it can't say never, but it doesn't seem like it's a thing that's going to be in principle able to be done.
It has too many variables. And again, it's not even that it couldn't do it, because in theory it could, right? It could, if it could just keep producing images, right? It could eventually come up with something.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
The problem would be on the human side.
But
the humans would never have enough time to really thoughtfully review it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas on the ends of the spectrum, you do, because it's much more manageable.
Yeah.
You know, you're only talking about one variable or maybe two. But if you're talking about thousands of variables and trying to thoughtfully consider them, there's no time.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this is I think this is the most interesting problem of the architect.
Yeah.
Which is how to choose and where do you start?
Absolutely.
And what are the sort of baseline conditions from which you make decisions?
I mean, basically to be an architect is to make decisions. Like that's
to be human is to make decisions. But
no, sure, but I mean I think architecture, you know, is like on hyperdrive.
Yeah. But to make decisions that will persist ideally for
Not making just decisions for yourself. You're making decisions upon decisions upon decisions.
Right.
It's like there's a decision tree that you're part of, you know?
Yeah. But the first decisions that you make in a project, like the last decision you make may be what tint of paint to put on a wall.
Yeah.
Right. And that will have some kind of effect. But the first decision you make may be build or not build.
Right.
Or what orientation, or do you, you know, is it two buildings or one building?
Right.
Do you, you know, so those initial moves, the really kind of fundamental, the big moves in architecture, how you like lay out a campus, let's say for a church or a school, how you decide where the infrastructure and roads go, which organizes the people, which then backs into the buildings, kind of urban scale decisions.
Yeah.
These first decisions to me are the most interesting because they're the most sort of pervasive.
Yeah.
They're the hardest to change, and they're the most, just like the inertia behind them is so impactful that they're going to be, in, like some of the decisions the Romans made are still in place.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So the AI sort of question is really a kind of current version of how do you make the first decision? Mm-hmm. I think that's a very interesting question worth returning to.
Very much so. This was very enjoyable, Chris. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Like and subscribe.
Beauty Every Day Podcast. You're welcome, people.
Tell your friends. Till next time.
Yeah, thanks, guys.